This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is coming along to 5:39 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Sharmila. We were speaking earlier on about the vigil that took place at Dataran Merdeka last night, which saw ultimately participants being taken away by the police. And we've been asking you for your thoughts, which we'll get to shortly. But we're also getting lots of messages about what is likely to be the story of the day, which is the fact that after more or less exactly 5 days, we now have a new Prime Minister. It is our former Deputy Prime Minister, Datuk Sri Ismail Sabri Yaakob. We've been asking you for your thoughts on that as well. And we are also going to be talking about essentially the updates and ramifications surrounding this. Joining us now to discuss it is Dr. Oh Isan, Senior Fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. Isan, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Nice talking to you again.
So, what are your thoughts on this announcement?
Well, I guess it's more or less expected as Ismail Sabri sort of wrapped up more than half of the members of parliament over the last few days. And they were even invited to the palace in order to be verified of the willingness to support him and so on. So this is basically sealing the deal finally in appointing him as the next prime minister.
So what will come next?
Well, he would have to do two things. Number one, I mean, this is assuming the ceremonial part of it is over. He would have to then, number one, go to the parliament and hopefully pass a motion of confidence to really demonstrate that he does enjoy the majority in parliament. And number two, of course, we are talking about the formation of cabinet, right? And then all eyes now are on who will be the deputy prime minister. Yeah.
So one of the key things that has been repeatedly pointed out is that 114 MPs isn't a very secure majority to hold. I mean, it gets you over that 112 hump, but, you know, still. Could you explain why that's the case and how we might see this play out?
In that case, there are at least three sources of instability within this new ruling coalition. Number one, the Bersatu now been relegated to the number two position, the ruling coalition. They may or may not be very happy with that. So just like UMNO so-called rocking the boat when UMNO was number two, Bersatu could do a similar thing, especially if we have some, shall we say, ambitious personalities within Bersatu. Satu, who are also thinking of, if Ismail Sabri could clinch it, why not me, right? And number two, it's of course UMNO itself. Within UMNO, even though on surface things are patch up and so on, but I think there's still undercurrents of discontent against Ismail Sabri for being supportive of the Muhyiddin government. So that could also upset him at some point. And number three, of course, there is this very powerful Sarawak faction. I don't know what sort of demands they made of him. If he at some point were not able to meet those demands, then of course they might have some other ideas. So at least these three sources of possible instability. Yeah.
So then, given all of this happening, what do you think we might see at Parliament during the vote of confidence?
Well, the king has explicitly said Ismail Sabri has 114 votes. I think the king would like to see the same when it comes to the final tally of the confidence motion. But frankly speaking, it's still the prerogative of each and every members of parliament from now till that motion, which I think it's likely in early September, right? So from now till then, there are still, at least 2 weeks to toy around. Yeah.
So what do you think is likely to be the main immediate focus of Ismail Sabri in this new position of being Prime Minister?
Well, anybody who is becoming Prime Minister at this critical juncture of the country would face immediately two major challenges, right? Number one, it's of course the combat against the raging pandemic. Very ironically, today we see new heights in the daily new infection numbers. And number two, of course, the attendant economic downturn would have to be somehow reversed and revived. So these two challenges would immediately face the new prime minister and his cabinet. Yeah.
What's interesting is that as caretaker PM yesterday, Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin, in fact, loosened some of those restrictions as one of his last acts. How is that likely to impact or change what approach our current PM now might take?
Well, the current PM was very much part and parcel of the last government, right? In fact, he was almost at the public face of the last government because he was giving briefing every single day. So I think people are very eager to see how he would do things differently, what kind of new policies would he roll out, which are different from those previous policies, which, frankly speaking, but not quite successful in either tackling the pandemic or in reviving the economy, right? So I think he would have to get his hands dirty really, really soon to try to lay out, hopefully, new policies to try to bring us out of these difficulties here.
So we do have a question from a listener who wants to know, just curious why, if we were to look at last year's appointment, there was no vote of confidence in Parliament. Is this vote of confidence actually necessary to be conducted in Parliament?
There's no written constitutional provision mandating such a confidence motion, but we also subscribe to the British Westminster unwritten parliamentary system, whereby a prime minister upon appointment should indeed rush to parliament to get some sort of confidence motion passed in order to prove the legitimacy of his government, failing which he would have to resign just like his predecessor. Yeah.
So let's look at the impending cabinet lineup. What would you be looking out for?
Well, I'm guessing that the new cabinet would pretty much look like the old cabinet with some reshuffling of ministerial portfolios. Some have compared it to a game of musical chairs. Sometimes I sit there and you sit there, and sometimes we reverse our various sitting arrangements, right? In which case, I think it would disappoint a lot of people because, again, the last cabinet have not proved itself to be very effective in either tackling the pandemic or in reviving the economy. So I think he would have to bring in some new faces in order to sort of revitalize his government here. Yeah.
I'm curious what you think about cabinet size, because that's one of the main pushbacks or, you know, criticisms that the previous cabinet received, which was the size, the bloated nature of it. Do you think that we're likely to see the same size of cabinet?
Well, I think Ismail Sabri will face this dilemma. If he keeps the same cabinet size as previously, namely more than 30 ministers and so on, well, it would not be a very effective cabinet. Huh? We had ministers who, bluntly speaking, didn't quite know what they were doing, didn't quite know about their various ministries and so on. But if he were to reduce the size of the cabinet drastically, then he could not accommodate a lot of the leaders of these component parties, right? Then there will be, again, discontent, unhappiness, and so on. And then what we discussed just now, the rocking of the boat would start again. So I think he will have to somehow balance these two prerogatives. Yeah.
So speaking of the cabinet, we have seen that the caretaker Prime Minister, Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin, he's indicated that Bersatu's support of Ismail Sabri is actually conditional. And some of those factors include not including MPs with criminal charges being in the cabinet. Now, what do you make of this statement, particularly in terms of what it might say about political stability?
Well, the Muhyiddin government, to be fair to them, also did not include those so-called court clusters and so on, right? I think at this particular moment, those who are considered court clusters, they are also not very eager to take up ministerial positions. Perhaps, you know, if somehow their court charges would be somehow reduce or something like that, they'll be happy with that. So it's not really something which Ismail Sabri had to, you know, think long and hard over. Yeah.
A pretty central question, I think. Where does this leave the opposition and specifically Datuk Sri Anwar Ibrahim?
Yeah, I think you asked really the million-dollar question, because so far when we talk about instability and so on, I never even mentioned the opposition, right? I think the fact is, even though they are very substantial parliamentary numbers, and in theory they could rock the boat more than everybody else, but they're very disunited with various factions led by Anwar, by Dr. Mahathir, and so on. And unless they could somehow get their house in order and unite swiftly behind a leader, just like UMNO did, you know, like overnight and so on, I think it would be pretty difficult for them to make a difference, a political difference in the near future. Yeah.
So throughout the Perikatan National Administration, despite disagreements within the coalition and so on, Ismail Sabri really has been one cabinet member who stood firm with his support for Muhyiddin Yassin. With UMNO now returning to the premiership, might we see this change?
Well, now he is the boss, right? And Muhyiddin Yassin, in turn, would have to rally Bersatu's members in support of Ismail Sabri with the condition you talk about, which I don't think is a very difficult condition. So as long as there are adequate, let's say, cabinet positions for Bersatu, and also adequate number of seats been allocated to Bersatu in the coming general election, I think the harmony could more or less be somehow kept. Unless there are some ambitious personality, as I said.
Briefly, a lot of the messages we've been receiving from listeners this week, and in fact today in response to this news, have indicated a certain level of disappointment in politics as a whole and in the appointment of Ismail Sabri in particular, seeing him as a representative of more of the same old in Malaysian politics. What's your sense of how this appointment will be received on the ground and among the grassroots?
Well, I think if Ismail Sabri were to roll out something substantial, which could hopefully, you know, tackle the pandemic as well as revive the economy, then people might change the views on him. Otherwise, I think a lot of people would have to resort to self-help, because they don't see a lot of hope as to how we could get out of this really dark or black holes of pandemic and economic difficulties. Yeah.
So earlier, Muhyiddin Yassin has, of course, promised that the next election would be held by the end of July 2022. Do you still see this happening if Ismail Sabri continues with the previous administration's policies?
Well, I think those are just political promises which would come and go. When I talk about policies, I really mean like the more technical aspects as to how to handle the pandemic and so on. I sincerely hope he has a panel of experts who could advise him. Otherwise, if we are still doing more or less the same thing, I think the situation indeed would still be very dire, both pandemically and also economically. Yeah.
Ihsan, if I could push you a little bit, do you think that July 2022 will be that period where we see GE though?
I don't think so, because I think the pandemic may not even subside then with all these Delta and Lambda variants and so on. I think you'll be lucky if we could have a general election by the originally scheduled time, namely, I think, in middle of 2023.
Ihsan, thank you so much for taking the time last minute to speak with us.
No problem. Thank you.
That was Dr. Oh Ihsan, Senior Fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs, weighing in on the appointment of Datuk Sri Ismail Sabri Yaakob as the 9th Prime Minister of Malaysia. Let us know what you think. We are already getting lots of messages, which we'll come back to. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.